everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Robbie.
Well, hello there.
Hello,
how are you?
Hello, I'm okay. I'm
good.
Trying
good.
To get to where your facial.
Oh yeah,
hair
look
is.
At yeah. you. You got a little just beard a
little,
coming in.
Little something nice. Coming in for an Asian. It's pretty happy, nice. You know.
Well, now that we're you know now that we're retired from Starfleet, we can just do whatever. Don't have to keep the.
We can let our eyebrows grow. Why don't people's eyebrows just keep growing?
Some people do, Garrett. Some
seriously?
People.
Have you seen people like with really long eyebrows?
Some people need to trim their eyebrows. Let's
really?
Just say, yeah, they get yeah, a little
but it,
shaggy.
Would it grow as long as being, you know, past someone's chin? Sort of like
some people need to trim their ear hairs, their nose hairs,
yes.
their eyebrow hairs.
Yes. Do you do yes. all those things yourself?
You know, personal grooming is not something we discuss on the podcast. That's that's bonus material. Okay. Personal grooming.
So only yes. our Patreon patrons are allowed yes. to hear whether Patreon or not we clip our nose hair.
get to hear all of our personal grooming stories. Oh. And they're fascinating. They really are worth it. So I would recommend become a Patreon patron for personal grooming anecdotes with Tom and Harry.
I only have one thing to say to that. I'm going to give it a George Takei. Oh my. After hearing that. Okay. Yeah. So we've had a bit of a break. We haven't had.
You and I have not hung out together in a few weeks because you've been busy.
I've been busy with running around doing conventions.
Conventions are back. Sort of, kind of.
I could. Yeah. And, you know, you would have gone to the Vegas convention if you were not directing in Canada. Right. If you happen to be in the U.S., I think
if I weren't directing, like even if I were directing in the States, it's just to fly on a weekend in the middle of filming is really hard. And by the way, that I think that Friday night, the Vegas convention Friday night, I shot till 5 a.m. Like I was shooting all night.
Yeah.
So I couldn't have done.
You would have been a zombie completely. Yeah. Right. So that wouldn't have happened. Yeah.
Okay. But I'm sad I missed it. I heard Roxanne was there.
Yeah, Roxanne was there and Beltran and myself. So the Voyager.
And Jeri Taylor was there.
Jeri Taylor was there. She wasn't in our panel, but she was there. It's been, let's face it, a couple of decades since I've seen her. So it was so nice to reconnect with her.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So the panel, the Voyager panel, the 50th anniversary panel. The 25th anniversary of Voyager panel.
Jeez, what are you doing?
I just gave us 25 more years.
By the way, we look really good for a 50-year reunion. I gotta say,
for 79, Robbie, you look great.
Exactly.
I was so sad because, as you know, 2020 was the year of the 25th anniversary of Voyager, and all the celebrations were canceled. Everything,
I know,
right? Everything was canceled. So now the Vegas Trek Convention. This year, 2021, what we were hoping was going to be, you know, in honor of the 25th of Voyager, but that didn't happen. It was a very small Voyager panel. It was just myself, Chakotay, and Torres, your on-screen lady. So that's it, the three of us. So no Janeway. And then Jeri Ryan canceled at the last minute because of production for Picard not allowing her to go to the convention, something along those lines for safety purposes. And it was a panel with the minorities of Voyager.
Oh, the diverse and inclusive cast of Voyager.
Yes.
That's great.
There were no Caucasians in attendance of this panel. Maybe That's watching, great. But not That's actually great. On stage. Yeah, so it was the diverse, ethnically diverse Voyager panel. So it was good. We had a fun time.
Do you
but
hear
you,
the,
but you were
the,
missed.
Police, the police cars coming for me?
Yeah.
You hear them?
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm about to be taken in.
You've been arrested.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Robbie.
I live in a very active part of Vancouver. We're 26 floors up. We're way off the street.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like the area where if there's trouble on one side or the other of town, they have to go past us. So we get all the excitement. It's very exciting.
I thought it was your Irish mafia connections, actually. Yes. But that's not
it's
it.
It's the crime family I'm a part of.
Okay. Exactly. The McNeils.
The Starfleet crime family.
The Starfleet. Straight from Dublin. Straight from Ireland. The Starfleet crime
family. The Starfleeters.
We're going to Starfleet you right now if you don't shape up in front of us.
That sounds...
Can we just do that?
Painful.
I like that.
We're going to Starfleet.
We're going to start. Why do we sound like pirates?
I don't know. Well? It turned into pirates.
It is a little.
Everything sort of turns into pirates when I do an accent. It just.
No, that was actually the best accent I've heard you do.
Oh, really?
Your Irish accent. That was really good. What were you basing it on? Was there a character on
you? I was basing it on you.
No. Oh, my gosh. For the longest time, Lucky Charms commercials were how I based my Irish commercial.
I don't know that that's the most authentic Irish culture. That
yellow hearts, green clovers. Is it? No, that's not the most authentic. No. Okay, what about Irish Spring commercials? Like Irish Spring soap commercials?
Wasn't that Kate Mulgrew? Didn't she do Irish Spring commercials?
You're joking. No, you're making a joke. No, are you being serious?
I am not.
Oh, my God. I want to see
this. She was in one.
Please.
Back in the 70s, way back in the day.
I love those commercials.
Yeah.
I wanted to be Irish because of an Irish Spring commercial. So she's in it?
We should find that out for sure. But I'm pretty sure she did Irish Spring commercials. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. This is exciting me now.
I know.
I want to check this
out. So much is happening in this episode of The Delta Flyers. So much is happening.
Oh my God. Okay, let's go watch this episode. Okay, without further ado.
What is the episode?
Oh, it's called Revulsion. I should tell you that.
Revulsion.
Revulsion?
Revulsion. Okay.
Or Revulsion in French.
Revulsion. Revolution.
Oui.
Okay. Revulsion.
Yeah, Revulsion.
Let's go watch it. Okay. I'm very interested because the title is compelling.
I'm also excited we're both not wearing hats today.
I know. It's very unusual.
That is unusual. Wear a hat. Usually one of us is wearing a hat or both. And today, no. We'll see you soon, everybody. Hey, everyone. Robbie and I are back from watching Revulsion.
Yes, we are. Revulsion.
Oh, my.
I was really surprised at so many things about this episode.
Me too. Go ahead.
I was going to say it was just it's not a title that I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
So it did not ring any bells. And it's actually a really important episode in a lot of ways. So I'm surprised I didn't remember it.
I did not remember that Lisa Klink wrote this episode. And I did not, And I did not know this was the directorial debut of producer Kenneth Biller. Ken Biller directed this episode. So
I know. I forgot that too. I did not remember that he was the one, this was his very first directing assignment on our show. I don't remember if he directed many more. I do remember him wanting to direct. I remember first season with Ken. Talking with him about it, but I can't remember if he directed more or not.
I think after he directed this, he realized how time consuming and how much of a pain in the butt it is to be a director. And I don't think he did many more after. I don't think he did any more after this.
More Voyager. I think he went on to direct in
other shows.
On his other show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's gone on to a very successful writing career. And I think he's directed a bunch. He did a show called E-Ring a few years after Star Trek. It was after Voyager. It was right after Enterprise went off the air. And Mary Howard, our line producer, and Marvin Rush, our DP, and a bunch of other Voyager crew went on to work with Ken on E-Ring. And I think he directed episodes. And I don't remember what that show was about, but I remember Ken being involved in it. And I guess it was a hit, it ran for a couple of years.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see. That was the show I remember a lot of our Star Trek friends, like Marvin Rush and all those guys, Mary Howard, everybody sort of had been on Star Trek shows for so long that I was glad to see them starting to get out and do other kinds of shows. And that mm-hmm. was a Ken Biller show. So he was a big part of our crew moving into transitioning out of Star Trek into their new careers. Yeah.
Yeah. Leland Orser. Did you remember him from seeing him in this episode?
Is he in Saving Private Ryan, or what is he in?
He's in something else that was really big during the 90s. I do remember that. So yeah. I'm blanking as to what it was. Was he in Saving Private Ryan?
Let's look it up.
Let's look up his
Leland.
His IMDb. Let's look up his IMDb and see what
Leland
it says.
Orser. Bone Collector. Saving Private Ryan. Yeah.
Oh, good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
I thought he was in Saving Private Ryan.
You're really good with that.
ER, that's the big...
I'm impressed.
That's the big things.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he was great. I thought he was really, really good. And,
to play Unstable, he did it perfectly. So, good job.
He did great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, let's... without any further ado, let's do our poetry...
Yes.
...synopses, please.
Here we go.
Let's do our poetry synopses. I'll start with my limerick.
Sure.
Here we go. Tuvok gets a promotion. Love, B'Elanna balks at the notion. HD25 doesn't like organic sweat. Seven is someone that Harry wants to pet. The doc doesn't mind organic commotion.
Nice.
There you go.
Good job, Rebecca. That was actually really kind of cool. There's some funny stuff in there. Yeah. Okay, here we go with
squeezed
my haiku.
A lot of the story
did,
in there.
You did. You got every bit. Okay, this is much more abstract than that. But here we go. Okay. Here's my haiku for Revulsion. A lone survivor. Kim is awkward with Seven. It's a long story.
Ooh, very deep.
Yeah,
it's funny. The awkward with Seven. I tried to work that into the limerick.
Into your limerick.
I felt like awkward was a word that needed to be used.
Yes.
Somewhere.
So I picked up the slack for you.
Yes. There. Thank you.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So we said written by Lisa Klink, who was very prolific in these middle years.
Yes.
I feel like Lisa was on. Her name was on every other script.
Oh my God.
Unbelievable.
I don't remember her writing this script at all. I mean, I talk about this episode. I talk about that scene in the mess hall with Seven of Nine at many different conventions. I've talked about that me turning down Seven after she, you know, basically says, right. Let's do it. And then I'm like, no. And I always talk about like those damn writers. And little did I know, I've been basically saying, damn you, Lisa Klink. But and I feel bad.
It was Lisa. Yep.
Lisa.
She protected you just like Tom tried to protect you with his advice.
All right.
So we open up in some mystery ship.
Yeah.
And there's this Data looking character.
Call him Crazy name? Data.
HD25. Dejerin or Dejerin or something. He says his name. At
what?
Some point. HD25.
He has a name? I thought he's just HD25. He has a name?
I thought they gave him a name. But
oh,
anyway.
Wow. Okay.
But I wrote down HD25 in all my stuff.
Okay. Well, my first thing that I wrote down is shocking opening scene of the guy being dragged
gory.
in the blood, right? Yep. I'm like,
very
what
gory,
the?
Very gory for Trek.
I don't remember that. I mean, I'm sure some parents were probably freaking out with their kids sitting there next to them watching that. So,
well, this is by season four, we had gotten, we'd done a bunch of Borg stuff. Here we are in season four. The show was much darker, like the Borg influence on our show and the species 8472 and just a lot of the stuff that's happened. I think Marvin started lighting the show a little different. Mm-hmm. The writers started writing more edgy things. So this is seeing that gory scene at the top, dragging the dead body with all the blood. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised to see it because that was the direction we were going. That's where the show had heading. So
yeah, I'm not upset about that. I am upset about the fact that you see after the initial drag, there's another shot where he's now dragging him across another floor. And now there's no blood. It's like, where's the blood now? Right.
I know.
Later he's trying to clean the blood off and clearly props or set, whoever's in charge of dressing that set and putting that blood on there. It's not even coming off.
It's paint. Even a little, it's just paint.
I understand. And I guess there's no way they could have put something on there that would have wiped off easier, because it just, I don't know. It just looked like it had been caked on for 2 years.
I think that it's funny, because I think that on Star Trek, yeah. And I'll get into some of this as we talk through our recap, but I do think, because the whole Star Trek crew, the props department, the art department, everybody, they were used to doing these sort of sci-fi fantasy stories and aliens and everything, that when it came to the things that were just like normal, like blood, like what you're talking about, like yes. if it was a cop show and they were doing a gory scene like that, the props people, they would all be used to, oh, well, blood needs to react like this. Like it wipes up. It's, you know, making things natural and realistic is what they would do on another show, a normal yes. show. But on a sci-fi show, you're not used to making things natural. You're used to making them unnatural and alien okay. in some way. And so okay. I just don't think there wasn't a radar with all of our departments. And even, I feel like even with us as actors, there wasn't a radar to constantly be going, wait a minute, is this how things would really work? Or, yeah, anyway.
That's a good theory. I mean, that makes sense. If you are a crew member on a sci-fi show, on a Star Trek show, and you're used to making things always
weird,
supernatural, different than the norm, then all of a sudden you got a scene where you're kind of doing a whodunit, like who killed these people, yeah. and it's just random yeah. regular blood, then they're like, oh, I don't know what to do. So maybe yeah. that's what happened.
Or they're just not even paying attention to it, because yeah. the normal yeah. stuff, like it's we've talked about this before, like when we go into a ship with our phasers drawn, yeah. we had no tactical advisor. We had no right. one saying, here's how you would use a weapon.
Correct.
Here's how you would sort of
enter a room.
Yeah. Enter a room, leapfrog each other, cover each other.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know,
we didn't have that. We didn't
none
have
of that. That.
We made so, that. Oh, yeah. We made that up.
Just made it up.
Yeah. That's yeah. all. Oh, yeah. Well, I will say that opening scene in the mess hall where you're telling the story about Tuvok, where you're roasting Tuvok, yeah. that was a nice interchange between us. Very kind of natural, you know, dialogue. My only concern, or my only critical eye, you know, my only critique, let me say that. My only critique about that scene is when I impersonate Tuvok, I sound like George Takei. I sound like Sulu. I'm doing a Sulu impersonation. Why didn't I do that more? You know,
more like Tuvok. Tim Russ.
Yeah, more, because Tim Russ is very measured and very drawn out. You know, he doesn't yeah. speed through his lines, right? I should have did more of a live long and prosper. You know, more of a like a kind right. of Tuvok-y sounding right. cadence. But I didn't do
interesting.
That.
Interesting. Interesting.
So that bugged me. Did that pull you out at all?
No, it didn't.
No.
Okay. No, I came away from that scene like you said.
Hmm.
It felt very naturalistic, very yeah. authentic. Yeah. And I realized we never have scenes
like
where
that.
All of us are like that, where we're sitting never. Around
no.
telling funny stories, where we're no. laughing. It was such a refreshing, the script was refreshing.
Yes.
The
yes.
subject matter was refreshing.
Yes.
It was, I wrote down, we don't often have these kinds of just character scenes.
No.
Where we're talking about our affection for each other.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
about like our job performance or any of that, but just those kind of little human anecdotes that characters share.
Yeah.
And it felt very natural. I felt like I was really happy with the way that whole thing came off. I thought it was very authentic. I loved the laughter seemed genuine.
Yeah.
The way that Ken shot it without cutting into close-ups all around and just mm-hmm. letting the shot sort of move yeah. around behind all of us. And
yeah.
It was great. It was really great.
I agree. And I think part of the reason why this scene stands out as sounding so much more natural is the lack of technobabble in this, yeah. in the dialogue. You know, we're not talking about recalibrating any EPS relays, anything that, you know, most normal human beings are not going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that really helped it as well.
You know, what occurred to me too, is yeah. that one reason I think that often on a Star Trek show that you don't have those extended, long sort of overlapping dialogue and laughter and stuff is because there's a lot of characters who aren't human.
Correct.
Like, you know, that kind Bingo. Of interaction is a very human
interaction.
It's mm-hmm. messy. It's yeah. kind of overlapping.
Right.
It's, whereas with the non-human characters, scenes naturally sort of stop And then you get into that alien rhythm for a minute, whether it's a Vulcan or a Klingon or hologram or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see such a familiar human moment, I think, with Harry and Tom and the captain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
And also very impressed with, I mean, you talked about the camera work that went on in the beginning story that you're telling, but they, even after that, the whole thing where Torres walks out first and she crosses camera and then it doesn't follow her. It waits for you to run after her into the hallway, right?
Yeah.
Into that scene where now, I love this scene because now it's something is tracking. Finally, it's not every episode is independent of the next episode.
Yeah.
Now it just picks up where what happened last. Well, you guys are out in space. She says, "I love you." You say nothing back, right? Nothing. And then you come up with this. Well, clearly you were oxygen deprived and you probably didn't mean it, you know, and you're being all defensive and trying to protect your own feelings.
And I'm trying to give her an out. Like maybe you didn't really mean it.
Yeah,
maybe what you said was,
here's your chance to say, you know, just kidding. This is my mulligan. Yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Tom says it's been 3 days since you said, you know, what you said. And
right.
And I love, but by the way, so she says, oh, yeah, well, just because I said I love you doesn't mean that you have to say anything. And then Tom cuts her off. He goes, oh, shut up, and grabs her and he kisses her in this passionate kiss. Great shot pushing around.
And your hand looked like it was about to do something. Megan was like, did he just grab her? And no, your hand was coming up to grab her hand. But it looked like you were trying to
grabbed her hand. Pressed her. Romantically against the wall.
I thought you were trying to cop a feel, but you weren't. You were actually grabbing the hand.
It was just honoring her Klingon side with a little aggressive male female interaction. And he kissed her, and then of course the doctor shows up.
Yeah, the doctor.
But by the way,
ruined the whole mood.
Tom never said I love you.
No, he
still didn't.
Didn't do it. You avoided it by just being aggressively kissy. You're like, watch this. Yes, avoided it.
I did notice, so when Doc interrupts and then she takes off, you know, kind of flustered and she takes off. I did notice, I don't know whether it was Ken or whether it was us as actors, but when Bob came out, I sort of took a couple steps after, Tom takes a couple steps after B'Elanna and then turns around to the doctor. Doc, what do you want?
Yeah.
And then I sort of glance back a couple times.
Referring back to her, where she left. Yeah,
where B'Elanna went. And I don't know if that was Ken or me, but those are the kind of things I think for the audience that, like, those little details, they're usually not scripted. They're most often not even directed. It's the kind of stuff where, like, as an actor, you've got to track, you know, where's my character's point of view? What is important to me right now?
That's totally right.
You know, and where is this story? Where's the most important value of the story? It wasn't with the doctor in that moment. It was in what was going on with B'Elanna. So
I did like you referring back to where she left, but then you also added this very small move where you bring your hand up to your mouth, and it's almost like you're like savoring her kiss or something like that. Yeah, you're I remember how your lips felt. And so I thought, wow, did Biller probably? I'm going to guess that Biller did not direct you, and that you had done your homework, and you were very present in the moment, and you kind of kept the before and the after going on in that scene. So I'm going to say that, right? I mean, would you agree?
I would think so. Directors rarely give those kind of nuances and details. That's what I love about being a director now, is watching what the actors bring, you know?
Yes, yes.
I love seeing those nuances and details. Yes. It's the kind of stuff you can't plan as a director.
That's true. That's true. But I will say the caveat out there for all of you aspiring actors is keep it simple, though. You know, when you try to add way too many pieces of business with your blocking then now it just gets messy. It's like, well, you're just adding stuff just to add stuff, and that's not good either. So there's a fine line right there, right? A sweet spot.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed. Yeah. So the doctor says to Tom, I asked the captain about, you know, who's got advanced medical training, and you're the best one. So you got 3 shifts a week. And Paris is like, wait, I'm the nurse. And I love where he says, well, if that's the title you prefer, 3 duty shifts a week, which I thought was
right.
But I thought I was a nurse years before. I thought it was that first season before Kes took over. I thought that was it. I did not remember going back to nursing duty.
You served a second duty shift, right? Or duty.
Double duty.
Exactly. I will say this, though. When he says to you, he goes, Mr. Paris, I'll expect. What did he say? I'll expect you with a tricorder and a smile, right? And so I immediately thought, oh my gosh, if Rebecca could make a small Paris with just his a naked Paris with his privates kind of blurred out, holding just the tricorder and a smile.
That's it.
And just popping that on screen. Yes, that to me was
nothing else.
Pretty funny. Yeah.
Funny. Yeah. All right. So Chakotay is talking to Harry next in the mess hall and says Harry's got to work with Seven.
Right.
To work on upgrading the astronautics lab.
Creating the astrometrics lab. That's what it is. Yes.
Yes.
And this is another tracking moment, right? Because Kim has been backhanded by Seven with his ASF, his awkward Starfleet fall, you know, in the prior episode. Was that right? Or two episodes ago?
A couple episodes back.
Yes. But yeah. So that tracks here too. Go ahead. You were saying.
Yeah, so Chakotay says you need to go do this, and this is the beginning of Seven's new set, the Astrometrics Lab, which becomes a regular, you know, a whole new place that we filmed lots of scenes, obviously gave Seven a place to work and to be that wasn't on the bridge, but it also gave all of us a place, gave the writers a place to write new, you know, set new scenes and new stories, So this is the beginning of that.
Right.
And then we cut back to the bridge and there's a message from HD25, who is an isomorphic projection.
Right. Right.
Or a hologram.
Or a hologram.
Basically going, help me. Help me.
Exactly.
And again, for those, we've said it before, but when we're shooting the scenes on the bridge, there is nothing up there. There's no projection. So you're just looking, everybody's acting. I'm sure we had not even seen this actor perform the role. So we were just sort of guessing at, you know, you're reacting to a script supervisor reading the words.
There's also a good chance that character wasn't even cast yet. Sometimes that'll happen. We'll be shooting a scene and it's with an actor that hasn't even been, you know, if we don't even know who it is yet. Right.
Yeah.
So he pleads, the doctor pleads with Janeway. Well, actually the doctor sort of starts acting like he's the captain in a way.
Yeah. He starts designing the whole rescue.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. I think Janeway says something like, I don't remember giving you the command to go do this, Doc. Yeah.
So, I don't know I'm not sure if I'm okay with that. I'm a little bothered by how human he's become so quickly. Like he's very,
it's interesting because he's become human very quickly. Seven becomes human way quickly in this episode, I think.
Yes.
Her human awareness is huge in this episode.
Okay. All right.
Whereas up till now, she's been playing sort of, I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't. And now all of a sudden she understands all human things. Anyway,
we'll get to that. So distress call, doctor says he's the best person to go on this away mission / rescue mission. And if Janeway is worried, no problem. I will take Torres. She knows how to deal with my emitter. Let's make this happen. Right.
Yeah.
Then we have a scene where Kim heads to the cargo bay to find Seven. And it was for me, you know, this scene, I felt like it could have been filmed a little bit more creepy or scary, you know, because she sort of startles him, but not in the way, like I wouldn't have filmed it that way. I wouldn't have had her climb down that side ladder. You know, I would have had her just pop up right behind Kim where he turns around. He's like, whoa, you know, where he's freaked out. It was just, I don't know what happened there, but any thoughts on your,
I don't know. I think there was definitely an attempt to make it sort of suspenseful and creepy and, you know, Harry, I would guess he's very nervous. I mean, we saw when Chakotay gave him the assignment that he was nervous. Chakotay asked him, clearly he's nervous here. But it's funny, like, I feel like the audience is a bit ahead of this story, honestly.
Okay.
Like, I feel like there's been a clear sense in the scenes that we've seen Harry and Seven in that Harry's got a crush on her. Like, I think the audience is way ahead of this. So to play into the suspense that he's afraid of her because she hit him, I don't know that I buy that as much as he's got a crush on her.
Well, no, how do you come to that conclusion that he has a crush on her from before this, though? Is it because
I feel like the way he was friendly? I just feel like the way that the scenes played out with you and Jeri Ryan when you were in that earlier episode where she hits you on the back of the skull.
Right.
It felt like there was flirtiness going on. It's just, you know.
Well, okay. You did mention that when she showed up when Janeway shows up with Seven in engineering and Torres and Kim are there.
Yeah.
And Kim sort of smiles like, you remember Seven. Kim has a smile. In your reactions from that episode, your video reactions that you did for our Patreon patrons, you mentioned it, you're like, wow, you're really excited to see her, Harry or Garrett. But what it was I was trying to play nervous laughter. You know what I'm saying? How people like will laugh when they're super nervous. And the nerves were that this is a Borg, you know, so that was my initial way I was tackling that. Yeah. So
Took it when I watched the episode.
Yeah.
And maybe because I know the longer story of Harry and Seven and and all that. But to me, I feel like the audience knows Harry, whether they've seen it or whether it just seems like the move, he's the innocent young guy who's fallen for some girls before.
Yeah.
And here he is sort of getting lined up with Seven in a number of times. I feel like that's going to be the story they're going with. So to me, the suspense in Cargo Bay doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like I think she could have just turned around and you could have just been walking in. It could have gone right into the scene. I didn't think it needed anything more than that.
Okay. Sure.
So I agree with you, but for different reasons. I agree with you that like, I think she could have just turned around and he could have been there. And
right.
I definitely think you and Jeri both played kind of the crossover from the last episode where she, there was some apprehension.
Yeah.
But it's apprehension and excitement at the same time. You know what I mean? He's like excited because he's got kind of feels a crush about this girl.
Yeah.
But he's apprehensive because she's dangerous. But it's okay. I thought it was great. I mean, I don't don't think it's a problem.
No, it's not a problem. I just wanted to be clear for all the listeners out there where my intentions were. My intentions were not to show any type of preference or crush, any type of crushing on Seven at all until this episode after we were forced to work together. When I started getting more used to her, she's not backhanding me, and that's when I fall for her kind of a thing. You know, I felt like this was the pivotal episode where, wow, I really do like her.
Oh, I think it comes out. Yeah, I think it comes out in the writing explicitly here, but I think it's, I feel
it was
like
hinted at before.
Oh, I do. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I feel like Harry's been sort of taken with her, I feel like, since she came on the ship. And it's like that excitement and that nervousness that happens around, you know, whatever an experience for a character or a person might be of like, oh, this is, it scares me a little, but it's also, attracts me a little. And so I'm conflicted. And I think this story overall with Harry and Seven in this episode is great for both the characters. The only problem I have is I think she's far too human aware in this episode for where we are with her character. And I think it would have been more effective if Harry had been the one that was introducing her to this humanity. Mm. And then maybe at the very end, she takes a big leap forward. And that's when he's like, whoa, in that scene in the mess hall, for example. But up until then, it would have been interesting if he had been the one that was sort of, here's how humans are and teaching her more. Cause I just thought she knew it all.
Yeah.
Way too early.
Okay. Yeah. So it would have, that makes sense. It would have flowed a little bit better, right? More organic. And it's interesting because you have issues with how human aware she is. And I have issues with how human aware the doctor has become in this episode. It's like,
it's interesting.
The heck? And that brings us to the next scene in the shuttle with the doctor and Torres, where he is, what is he? Is he jealous of Paris or is he just anti-Team Tom? What is he doing? It's like,
It's like
he turns this is not what his program is meant to do. I feel like I thought this was
sort
so anti
teasing her or
it. Yeah. It just doesn't seem right. It was almost like he felt that he was going to try something new. I'm Bob Picardo, you know, like, oh, well, you know, I'm so advanced now that I can do this now. And Ken Biller just watched it and said, okay, that's fine. It's in the writing, you think?
Oh, I think it's all in the writing.
Actually, sorry, it is in the writing. But I felt like it was too, like he would have been more deadpan in the delivery of those lines, as opposed to, you know, being that he was such a master craftsman in trying to get under the skin of Torres, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that if he was more monotone and more sort of, you know, just computer-like, you know, it would have been better.
Yeah, it did seem like some of the character elements in this episode were inconsistent.
Yes.
Even though as an episode, like often happens on our show, the episode works for itself in a bubble. Mm-hmm. But when you look at it in the bigger context, like, you know, yeah, I agree with you. Some of the doctor stuff was a little too human.
Right.
For where he's at.
But did he come off as jealous? Did he come off as jealous at all in that scene to you?
I don't know. It just felt like it felt sort of like teasing, and I wasn't sure why the teasing, you know.
Right.
I'm not
because
sure
he has nothing invested in Tom Paris or Bellana.
Right. No, there's exactly.
That's why I was confused. Yeah. Like, why are you, where is this coming from? You know, in a way. So, all right. Okay. So small inconsistencies.
But I did like overall that Bellana defended me and said that I'm super responsible.
She did.
She got a little triggered when he was getting, you know,
she defended you just like a good girlfriend would. And, you know,
by the way, I got to say that the shuttle was much darker than we normally shoot.
Yes,
it was very dark and moody again. Mm-hmm. This season three into season four transition.
Yeah.
Our show got a lot darker.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't like, if you look at the shuttle scene, the Starfield is not moving, and they probably just put the static Starfield outside the window. When you see Torres, you know, you see stars behind her.
Right.
They're not moving, and they should be moving. No.
Interesting. Because they are en route to the other ship, right? They haven't.
Yeah,
they're
heading to the other ship. Yeah. So we had a Starfield that was just still. That's what they use in this scene. Mm-hmm. We had a Starfield that slowly moved on a track. And then we had green screen if it was supposed to be warp stars, if we were at warp or impulse.
So they should have green screened it and put that in post, and they didn't do that. They just kept the static. There you go. There's some holes in the script here, or inconsistencies. Let's say that inconsistencies.
It was probably budget. You know, they probably didn't have the room to put the moving star field because that was a big piece of equipment. Sometimes they do that. There were a lot of inconsistencies. If you go back through and look at the stars outside, sometimes they should be moving and they're not. Sometimes they're, you know, things are not. We should see something outside the windows that we don't.
Yes.
And it's just for money, usually.
Right.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The next thing that happens is they transport over from the shuttle to this alien ship. Mm-hmm. And one thing I noticed immediately was as they start walking through the ship, obviously it's supposed to be spooky and scary. We don't know where ND or HD25 is. Mm-hmm. We know he's killed the guy in the teaser.
Yep.
But one thing I noticed was the flickering lights. Mm. And this has come up recently on sets with me because a lot of movie lights now have gone to LED panels, LED fluorescents. They don't use incandescent lights anymore. They don't use, everything's LED on a set. Well, back in the 90s when we did Star Trek, they were
zero
still
LEDs.
Zero LEDs. Yeah. They were all incandescent lights, which means when you flicker them on and off, they kind of glow up and go down and glow up. And there's a little bit of a, like a up and down on an LED. It's either on
or off.
Or it's off. There's no analog. Yeah. There's no analog feel to the light.
Right.
And I was watching this scene thinking, oh yeah, of course there were incandescent lights in the 90s. That's why it's got a cool, it's this flickery thing that I tried to do last week on my show,
but you couldn't do it.
LED lights. And so they just go tick, tick, tick on and off. And it, I was like, it's not as spooky. Lights.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, do we have any incandescent light? Nope. Everything's LED. But then I started, today I started going, wait a minute, in the future.
Yeah.
They're not going to have incandescent lights. Like, this is a spaceship. They'd be beyond whatever comes after LED lights.
LED would be the second generation, and now would be the 80th generation of lighting, right? So, yes.
But here we were on this alien spaceship, and you could see the incandescent sort of... It was cool. It was scary, but not sci-fi.
Yes. Ah, good catch.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. So HC-25, they're snooping around and he reappears and he comes over with a hammer and we think, oh God, it's going to get gory. Mm-hmm. And then he hears Torres say something about the doctor being a hologram and he disappears and the hammer falls down. And they're like, where'd that come from? They look around and he reappears in front of them now. Mm-hmm. And he says to the doctor, oh, you're an isomorph like myself.
Right.
And I think the doctor says something like, well, we use the term hologram.
Yeah.
And then he turns to Torres and he says, and you're an organic. And I like her line. Yes, that's one way of putting it.
Yeah. She also looked really, her face looked different in that scene when she, I don't know, she looked like an anime character. To me,
she looked very young,
her face was extra slender. I don't know what it was. It's just the lighting.
Very young, very kind of girlish. Innocent. And I don't know, something about her in this whole episode. Almost.
It was very bizarre. I'm like, what's going on here?
She didn't wear contacts, right?
No.
Roxanne never wore colored contacts.
Not like Neelix.
That's almost what it looked like to me. Yeah, I agree with you.
I didn't know what was happening. I was like, am I seeing things or I don't know.
She was very pretty. You know what it is? It's Tom Paris love. That's what it is. That's what it is.
Well, you know what? Then Roxanne Dawson is the best actor on the planet. Then holy moly. She gave off that little glow
Tom Paris love. That's what's happening.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You get a little Tom Paris, and then this is what happens. You start.
That's what happens.
Beautiful. That's right. More anime looking.
You just
get a glow. Exactly.
HC-25 tells us they left Soros 8 months ago with a crew of six, and he's the maintenance isomorph, he says.
Yeah.
And he was there just to clean up
And treated like crap by the crew. So
yes. Mm-hmm. And Torres wants to go below deck in the scene. And he goes, no, don't do that. Too dangerous. Yeah. Way too dangerous down there. There's a
radiation
leak. You can't do it.
Yeah.
Great. So we go back and there's Harry and Seven working away. And Seven has done her project. She's done doing her alignments or whatever, her panel fixes.
Yeah.
And Harry says, well, let me just... double check this, run a little diagnostic. She's like, you don't trust me?
Like, no, this is protocol. This is how it works.
Standard procedure and a protocol. Exactly. And he says, yep, there's a misalignment here. There's I forget what you said. It's like 0.0052
microns or something.
Microns or something.
0.5 microns off.
You're being so picky, dude.
I am being picky, man. I'm an exact guy. I got to get you're it exactly an exact guy. Right.
But if you're crushing on this girl, you don't want to like pick at her little microns. That's a bad move. Tom Paris could have given you some advice on this.
That's a bad move with a woman that's human her whole life, but a woman that is partially bored for most of her life. That's going to impress her. It's like,
true.
Right?
That's true. You're right. Man. Nice move.
Well, that was my move. Thank you.
Nice. I did notice, though, but at this point in our episode that you and Jerry were working very closely together.
Yes.
I was like, was that Ken's direction? Because your faces were always, it seems like, inches apart. And I was like, look at all these other scenes. Nobody else is standing that close, but no. I mean, it does pay off in your storyline later on.
Yes, you're mm-hmm. right. There's a lot of closeness going on for sure.
Well, I think it probably, you know, I wouldn't, I think that actually was probably Ken's direction in the script yeah. because they have you in the Jeffrey's tubes and in these tight spaces for a yeah. long time,
yeah.
which was to sort of intentionally
yeah.
put Harry and, you know, right up there next to Seven all the time.
Well, I'm going to throw out there, my favorite Harry Seven interaction was when he stops her from putting her hand in on the, you know, the coils in there that yes. are going to electrocute her basically. And I'm realizing afterwards that I've got both my hands on her, you know, body, her upper torso. And I kind of like, oh, you know, I straighten up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I love that interaction, that awkward nervousness there. That
yes, there was a lot of good close contact awkwardness. Yeah. It was very funny.
Yeah.
Very funny. Great. So we go back.
Torres is working now back on the
back
ship
on the
yeah, in a different
ship?
Area. Yeah. And yeah. then creepily HD25 just kind of shows up behind her holding a little plate of food of rations. Right.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
just so creepy when she's eating and she's like, oh, you nibble like a fish like that.
Well, first,
just like,
you know what I got to say about this scene, though? So this holographic, this isomorphic
projection
repair guy or whatever.
Yeah.
He shows up with some food for Torres on this creepy ship where he's already been a weirdo.
Yeah.
And she eats it.
She just eats it. Yeah. She's like,
she just eats it.
Like, again,
I know don't take food from strangers. Like, I was taught that when I was a little boy.
Okay. But, you know, we are now conditioned to an era where men spiking women's drinks or the other way around is rampant, you know, or people poisoning other people. Whereas I think in the mid-90s, I think there was a little bit more trust going on when we filmed this.
This is a bad move. This is a dumb move from my future wife, Torres, Bolana Torres. Do not eat the food of a stranger. I mean, luckily it didn't turn out to be anything, but this is one of those places where I'd say if we were on a reality, a more you know, modern day or
yes.
current time show.
Yeah.
If some potential bad guy offers you food, you don't eat
you don't eat it.
You pretend to eat it, and you know, like, I just don't think she would have been as naive to think this guy was at this point. He was already suspicious of him. Anyway.
But it was creepy. It's a creepy scene, definitely.
And he starts spinning out.
Oh, he flips out because
organics yes. and
no, because she says, I understand how you feel. And that's the turning point. He's like, you yeah. organic? You have no idea how I feel. And he flips out. Yes.
By the way, his makeup was not even. He was silver yeah. on his face, and then it
he went to
flesh
yeah.
tone.
Like, see, it was that they should have caught that should have been caught by a
yes,
number of
have.
People. They should have seen that, right? Yeah. Not just the makeup department, everybody, script supervisor, director, DP.
I felt that way with Brent Spiner, and I didn't watch, I haven't seen all the Next Gen episodes, mm-hmm. but sometimes I've seen clips or, you know, episodes.
You see a little bit of his skin.
Yeah, you see his skin. Yeah. And it's inevitable with that
yeah.
concept of makeup that it's going to bleed through.
Right.
I think, and I hate when I see that on Data because it just reminds me, oh, it's a guy with silver.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yes.
You know, it's, and most of our makeups, the prosthetic makeups are really good. You know,
right.
I totally buy into
right.
the alien thing. Mm-hmm. I made a note to myself after his big explosion and he apologized and everything. I made a note, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So I think ND25 is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
He played it so well, though, Mr. Leland Orser.
He was great. He was great. We go upstairs. Torres tells the doctor that we got a problem. He's kind of a lunatic. He's lying. Maybe he's hiding something, she says. You think that wacko is hiding something? And then the doctor starts to have some sympathy. He's like, well, you know, I felt alienated when yeah. I was first. And this sort of scared me because I was like, oh, no, we're not going to go down this story where the doctor like decides to, you know, align himself with this wackadoodle.
Yeah.
And by the way, at this point, I'm going, why aren't they calling for help?
Yeah.
Like Torres is flat out saying now, it took her long enough, but she's like saying, I think this guy's a cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah.
And they still are trying to deal with this with just the two of them.
Right. They should have called for backup at this point.
God,
right?
Yeah.
This is the time.
Yeah. I mean, Tom was waiting to save, you know, to help, you know, protect his future wife. He would have, he would have jumped out of sick bay and gone and helped her out.
He would have.
Then we cut back to Voyager, and Seven and Harry are pulling out something out of a, this is where you're pulling out the,
And then she hurts her hand.
Yeah. And she thinks she's becoming weak. She looks down. She's got a little cut on her hand. And I did notice as you were like, no, you need to go to sick bay.
Yeah.
And as you guys walk out, like your hands on her lower back, you've got the other hand. I'm like, holy moly. I've never seen how handsy can Harry get.
I got really handsy. I was like, I was trying to guide her.
No, I know. You were trying to take care of her.
I'm just trying to take care of her.
Yes. And your love language is physical touch. So yeah,
evidently. Harry's love language, and pretty much Garrett Wong's love language too, I guess.
Physical touch, I guess.
Yes. But I didn't touch anything naughty. I was just only touching, like,
but you can't because it's a family hour TV show, Garrett.
I get that.
But
I'm just trying to defend myself.
But you go to sick bay, and Tom is now the nurse or doctor.
Did you write this note down? Your lines that you say to Seven in the beginning are identical. They are identical to what the doctor would say to anybody. It's almost like you know, like,
oh, I didn't catch that.
But... oh my gosh. Just watch that scene. And
that's cool. Yeah. I like that then. I like that Tom, you know, the idea that maybe Tom had, you know, was
via
standing
osmosis?
In for the doctor.
I don't know.
Or intentionally, like, I'm going to be like the doctor.
The doctor. He's not okay. Here. Okay. I'll buy that.
I kind of like that.
Okay.
But Harry's wound up. He snaps at Tom.
I'm so mean.
You were
to you.
Really mad at me.
I was a jerk to you. I apologize.
And by the way, so you're kind of a jerk. And then I basically say, like, hey,
you're like,
see
chill
what's
out.
Going on. Yeah. Chill out. I see you've got a crush on her. And then I give you advice. But I gotta say,
but I deny it, don't I?
You deny it for a little bit, and then you're like, yeah, maybe okay.
Maybe a little crush.
And but you didn't ask me for my advice. Why is Tom giving you advice? You didn't ask me my opinion.
Because you were still acting like the doctor. You're still acting like the doctor who thinks he knows everything, right? So you were taking the initiative just like the doctor would, right? The doctor always gives his advice or his take on it without anybody asking him. So you were... in essence,
I was
channeling the spirit of the doctor. Yes. See, we're getting to the bottom of this episode. So happy.
I do like the line where I say, I don't know much about Borg women, but my advice is, my advice is don't.
Right.
I like that line. Just don't.
Were you happy watching this episode? Because in the beginning, you were like, I don't think Tom has much to do in this one. And I was
I didn't think I had anything at all.
Yeah. So it was kind of a mild surprise, like a gift, like a Christmas present, right? To see all this stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, that is a very funny line in and of itself. I don't know much about Borg women, but don't. Yes. That's it.
But my advice to you is don't.
Don't. That's it.
I think Tom says something like, oh, I hope you take my advice. And you're like, I'll think about it or something.
You have that line after I'm out of the room, right? Because I leave the room and you're like, I hope he takes my advice, which is also rare. Whenever someone leaves the room, there's usually the camera is now on the person left in the room, just reacting, a nonverbal
thinking
reaction.
And
thinking. That's
not,
it.
Not talking to
not
themselves.
Talking. No.
Clearly, Tom is lonely. So he's talking to himself now because no one's
around. I think
you're
channeling the doctor again.
I guess so.
That's it. Okay.
By the way, I did like sitting down at the doctor's desk.
Yeah, how was that? Pretty fun.
I felt like a cross between the doctor and Janeway. I poured myself a little coffee, put my feet up. Clearly, you know, they were trying to show I'm going to leave a mess. I'm going to make a mess in there. So later on when the doctor comes back, he's like, this place is a disaster.
Yes. Let's talk about you drinking that coffee. Okay.
Yes.
You bring that coffee up to your mouth and you do this little... this little lip, I cannot even impersonate or imitate your little lip purse that you do. What is that move that you just did? No, you weren't. Was it you reminiscing about Torres's lips and you're like doing a little
maybe.
Kiss? Maybe. I don't
was
know.
It hot? Maybe it was a hot cup. Maybe I was being careful.
It's very subtle. It's a very subtle move, but the lips.
I don't think it was intentional. Whatever I was doing.
Okay.
Was probably because it was checking. Just a hot cup. I don't know.
Just checking. Okie doke.
All right. So the doc is showing ND-25, the ship systems. And I'm thinking this whole time, no, why are you explaining how this whole ship works?
Yes. And first of all, you've now changed his name from HD to ND.
Oh yeah. He's ND.
I don't know why.
Nondescript number 25.
Yes. Okay.
He's HD.
Yes. Yeah. HD. High definition 25. Okay. All right. So yeah. So you're saying, why is he teaching them all this stuff, right? You're teaching the murderer how to escape and do more murder.
But basically. The doctor thinks he's a cool guy right now. And he really does. Sympathizes with him.
Yeah,
sympathizes and empathizes with his, his feeling stuck. And And HD, high definition 25, thinks the doctor is a hero. Like this is the moment where we're cutting back and forth with B'Elanna down below decks. Things are getting really kind of scary. And we go back up and HD 25 asks the doctor to join him on this vessel and just leave Voyager and they will explore, the galaxy. And so the whole time I'm thinking, oh, I hope that's not where this story goes. Like, I hope the doctor doesn't have to go down this road, which he doesn't ultimately. He sort of dips his toe in a little bit, but he never goes there.
No, he doesn't.
But then B'Elanna finds these dead bodies.
Yeah.
She turns on some systems, the lights come on. And that was kind of cool because it was like an upside down body hanging sideways and all
that. I like that.
That was kind of scary.
Can you do that again? How do you
But she finds the body, the alarm goes off, and HD25 says, "I'll be right back, Doc."
Yeah, because someone is trying to access his matrix. So his that's matrix. The alarm. Yes, the isomorph matrix.
Mm-hmm. And he transports down below, finds B'Elanna, throws her up against the wall, and then he sticks his hand.
Yes, that's a move that you see in Saturday Kung Fu movies where the one Kung Fu master puts his whole hand in to grab the heart and pull it out, right? So he's doing that. And and all I could think of was like, wow, I don't think that's ever happened on Star Trek Voyager where somebody sticks their hand into somebody else's chest cavity and tries to pull their heart out or strangle
never
their...
happened.
Yeah, no.
Very,
very crazy scene.
Very crazy. We go out with lots of pain happening.
Right.
And
but Torres does take him offline, right? She reaches over.
Oh, yeah. She reaches over. That's right.
Yeah.
She reaches over. She almost gets the button and then finally hits the button. He's out.
He's out.
Yeah, but we don't know if she's okay.
No.
We go back to Voyager.
Mess hall. And here it
over,
is.
Over a ship shot, we hear Harry's log.
His personal log.
His personal log. And I was like, it's an official log, though. I wrote down, wow, this is really personal for an official log. This is like journaling. I'm like, when do we hear characters like, dear diary?
Well, that's what it should have been. It should have been Harry in his quarters going, dear diary, and just writing down,
it was
kind of talking in ASMR.
Yes.
I've now met 7 of 9. I love her. And just doing this really kind of low thing. But you're right. Why on earth would Harry record an official log entry? Why?
I don't think we've ever heard. Have we ever heard a Harry log before?
Yes, we have. But it's always been about work. It hasn't ever been about this. Is the
this is really like Dear Diary.
It is.
It was funny. Okay, so we go to the mess hall. Harry's called 7. And I wrote down, wow, smooth operator. Like from the beginning, you're like, hey, you like the low lights in here? It's comfortable.
Well,
it's got a nice view.
Yeah.
You like something refreshing to drink? It was just like,
but it had to be that way because this Lisa wrote it as a turn the table scene, right? The turn the table scene has to start off one way, one direction, and completely go sideways. And yes, Harry had to be the smooth operator.
He was the smooth operator. I wrote down like, this is going to go badly. I couldn't even remember this episode, but I was like, this is going to go badly.
Yes. Oh my God. And then when she calls his bluff,
she knows.
Your pupils are dilated, blah, blah, blah.
You've been trying to create a romantic mood.
Yes. Yes.
He's like, okay, take your clothes off.
Yes. Take off your clothes. And then I'm like, but so I remember when we were filming, and I tell this story at conventions, that after we filmed the scene, Kim Beller yelled cut. And then Jeri Ryan turns around. She looks at me and she goes, oh, you lost out, is what she said to me, right? After the camera was stopped rolling. And she turns to the crew. She goes, any takers? And I just remember like Billy Peets, everyone like raising their hand, like me, I'm the one. I can do the job. I won't turn you down. I will take my clothes off, you know? So after this episode aired, it didn't matter where I was in the world. I could be traveling to, you know, I would be in England, Germany. People that recognize me from the show and had seen that episode would look at me and go, oh, they'd all shake their head because they knew that I had turned down the Nookie. You know what I'm saying?
The X-Borg Nookie.
The X-Borg Nookie, the EBN. I turned down the EBN and I could have had it. It was there. And I love how she leaves the scene by saying, she says, well, let me know if you would like to continue our work, is what she said.
Oh, it definitely feels like, I don't think the writers knew whether this was going to be just a one-off or if this was going to be a relationship. I think that they really thought maybe, you know, Harry and Seven of Nine will become a relationship. I felt that way. Like they were leaving the door open.
Trust me. I did too. And if they did go down that avenue, I would be on Picard right now with Jeri Ryan. It's what would happen. But I was shocked that they never touched that again. It was never, ever after this episode, after Harry says, no, I don't wish to copulate. Then you never, ever see that again. It's gone.
Really?
Right? No, because then the next person that falls in love with Seven is the Doctor, which makes no sense at all. And then Chakotay. And it's like, what the heck?
But I feel like Harry had an ongoing sort of like, I feel like there's a lot of moments in the show. We'll see as we watch these episodes.
We'll see. I feel like
there's a lot of moments that kind of say, that acknowledge from both of them that, oh yeah, you know, we both know that there's a crush there. There used to be a crush there,
really?
But we've moved past it.
Okay.
I feel like there's a lot of little moments, but you're right. This is a story that deals with it. I don't think there's another story that really addresses it, but there's moments. I think they track the moments.
You may be right about that. We'll see. We shall see.
Let's see. So we go back and the Doctor is reviving B'Elanna.
Yeah.
Thank God, my future wife. she has internal injuries. He stuck his holographic hand in her chest and squeezed her heart.
Basically, he's punctured her left ventricle, I think is what he said. So part of her heart has a hole in it right now.
How can she?
And she's standing, she's like, let's go to the command chamber for me to like, you know, figure something out. So now they're in the command chamber. And then she says,
I've taken him offline. And Doc looks over and sees the fish, holographic fish.
Right. Well, she asks, here's the thing. They can't beam back, right? They can't beam back to the shuttle because he's put a dampening field. So she says, listen, I've got my tools over there on that counter over there. So can you go grab them for me? And that's when the Doctor walks over and sees the fish and
says, wait a minute.
Yeah. I thought you turned off all the emitters. She goes, I did. And then you hear thump and a thud and you look over and just the way, I just love the way Roxanne posed herself. I mean, she just took completely as if she was a Pinocchio where the strings were cut and she just fell like that. It was brilliant. Yeah. I loved it.
Yeah. By the way, the HD25 first has to take out the Doctor and he hits him at the mobile emitter. And so he knocks the mobile emitter off.
Yes.
And that's why the Doctor disappears.
I love that line when the Doctor says, we're trying to help you because you're unstable. And then Leland Orser screams back, no, you're unstable. You're a hologram that thinks like an organic. I mean,
that's right.
Freaking out. I love that line.
It was very good.
Yeah. And really, the Doctor should have known that the mobile emitter is vulnerable. Like he should have just move your shoulder back. That would have stopped it right there. No,
I did think so. Yeah. So he gets the mobile emitter and then B'Elanna wakes up and HD25 starts going after B'Elanna. And I thought this was beautifully staged by Ken Biller.
Well done.
Because I know this was a small set. I know these sets they built. And it felt like he had a really wonderful cat and mouse with B'Elanna sort of trying to escape and finding that room and all the little detail. I thought it was really well done.
Agreed.
Ultimately, she grabs a power cable. And just as he's
let me just clarify for
what
you.
What is it?
I'm the English to Technobabble dictionary. It was a live isomagnetic conduit that she used to deactivate him.
Yes, yeah. Of course it was. That's science. Everybody knows that.
Everyone knows that.
So he dies. And then we cut to a bit later, Chakotay getting a glass of water out of his replicator in his quarters.
Yes.
In his office. And
did
Harry
you see where
in.
He put that? Hey, Robbie, where does he put that water?
On his desk, or I don't know.
He puts it on the control panel where all the buttons are.
Oh, right on the buttons.
Did you notice that? Dude, what are you doing?
I didn't notice that.
You just turned off our shields or something. Turned off life support. It's like, dunk, like that. So
that's funny.
I don't think anyone caught that except for, and even me when I first watched this, I didn't notice that. But in this rewatch, I was like, oh,
that's
God,
funny.
Lord,
now that you say it, I did. Something about the water just bothered me. It was just, I don't know why. Maybe that's what it was subconsciously.
You don't place any drinks on touch sensitive keypads, right?
No. But Harry comes in and he says, Chakotay's like, wow, you guys work fast. You're done with that project. And Harry's like, yeah, we're all done. Why don't we have an engineering team take over? I'm good.
I don't need to. You want to supervise this? It's your baby, Astrometric. No, it's cool. Just let him do it.
Absolutely not. And Harry does not want to say why.
No.
And I think it's interesting because this is why I thought that there was maybe going to be a Harry, how things turn out.
Right.
But I think the writer's intention here was, hey, maybe there will be a Harry and Seven,
It sure looked like that. Yeah. Because he says, I'm going to keep you on this job with her and I'm going to continue to assign you two to jobs over and over again. And I really loved the, I was very pleased with my acting where the one point where Harry thinks that Seven has told Chakotay about the take your clothes off bit. And I'm like, that little kind of just can't even grasp the situation. I'm nervous. I'm embarrassed. I'm freaked out, and I that was the one time I thought, I actually like what I did there.
It was very good.
Yeah. Like for me, that was believable. By the way,
I think after I did the rewatch, I go like, researching on the interwebs, lots of different things about the episode.
Yeah.
And I did see on one of the boards that that the scene with you and Chakotay was filmed weeks after the episode. It was an added scene.
Wow.
So normally what happens is they'll shoot the episode, they'll put it together, they'll edit it. And then if the episode is short or if there's something in the story, they're like, we need a scene to fix this story point so they must have either been short the running time was a little short, they needed another minute and a half, whatever, 2 minutes, or they looked at that story and said, hey, there's no real wrap up, there's no real resolution, we need some kind of resolve. So anyway, that was an added scene, it looks like, to me.
Okay.
Because it was shot, 2-3 weeks after.
That all makes sense to me now, because when I was watching that scene with Chakotay, looking at Harry's face, it's wider, it's heavier. It's almost like I'm retaining water in that scene. Does that make sense?
Funny.
Yeah. So I felt oh my God.
It
was weeks later, which would make sense. Maybe I ate a lot. And this is about the time when we started to eat craft service we didn't care what we were eating and all of us got heavy. So I'm feeling it 2 or 3 weeks later, I was actually heavier than when I filmed the episode.
That was a big break. So,
Okay.
Interesting. So there's the scene. There and then we go to sickbay.
Yeah.
And we get a nice dad joke from Tom right up front. B'Elanna says, is that going to be too late to meet me? Because the doctor says to Tom, hey, you're going to stick around here and help me clean up this mess. This place is disgusting.
Right.
And B'Elanna says, is that going to be too late for you to meet me in my quarters later?
Right.
And Tom says, are you sure your heart can take it?
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, dad jokes,
That was your right die away. Hard. That's like a die hard, Bruce Willis line right there. Oof. Are you sure your heart can take it? There you go.
And
you say you have to go check on me. Remember, you say I have to go check on Harry. I heard he's having a nervous breakdown. It's a long story. And that's when the doctor says he turns into HD25. He's like, right.
Yeah. The doctor also has a little dad joke. He tries to one-up me. He says, I'm detecting elevated hormonal levels. If you two don't take it easy, I'll have to declare a medical emergency.
Oh, the Trek way of saying get a room. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
goodness. Ba-dum-bum.
But we end the episode with the doctor deciding to let things be a little more organic and embrace a human side of things. He's not going to try to be so clean and neat and uptight about things.
He allows chaos to enter into his sick bay, right?
Yeah. And then we pan over to his office and we see what Tom has done, which is there's crap everywhere on his desk and it's a bit of a mess.
And now you see the origins of my haiku, the last line, because you talk about Harry and Seven being a long story. And then you ask B'Elanna at the end, what's going on with the doctor? And she says, it's a long story. So that's why I felt like those are the two main storylines really in this episode, right? Two long stories.
Well, that was not a long story. That was a good story and short.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Theme.
My theme is being human is messy, but that's okay.
Oh.
That's my theme.
Okay. Mine would have to be beware of a wolf in holograms clothing.
Ooh. Interesting.
Yeah. So yours is just kind of
being human is messy. Being organic is messy, and that's okay. Like that's part of being human. The doctor learns that lesson in the
end. That's a good lesson. Like, yeah. Mine's more of a joke.
HD25 did not learn that lesson.
No, and clearly
he got deactivated by a plasma conduit or something. Whatever you said it was.
Wow. Yeah. Overall, what is your ranking 0 to 10? What are you going to give this episode?
I actually like this episode a lot, although I wish the promise of that first scene where we were all sitting around a table with the laughter and the fun, there wasn't a lot of involvement by Tuvok or Neelix or Chakotay really, or Janeway much at all. So I'm going to give this like a 7.5.
Okay.
Because I liked it. For what it was, but it can't go much higher because those episodes have to involve all of us or else I just don't think it's the best episode. So
I'm going to go higher than you. I'm going to go 8 just because of the awesome interaction in the mess hall in the beginning. Yeah. I just love that scene so much.
Yeah.
And also because Leland Orser was the right casting for this.
He was awesome.
Did such a good job. So I'm going to boost it up a little bit more, and just overall, even the dad jokes, I enjoyed it. So this was one enjoyable episode for me. I liked it.
Okay. I did too. It was good.
All right.
So what is next week's episode?
Next week, Robbie and I will be reviewing, talking about The Raven.
The Raven. All right. I'm excited.
Nothing to
for
do
that.
With Edgar Allan Poe, I don't think, or maybe, I don't know. I just know that's the title.
Who knows? We'll see. And thanks everybody for joining us for the Delta Flyers podcast, for our Patreon patrons. Stick around. We got some bonus material coming right up.